What's up, everyone? This is Sarah Hudson.
And this is Evan Bogart.
And welcome to Right to the Source.
Listen, we all know creativity can be your best friend and your worst enemy. On Right to the Source, we dive deep inside the minds of creative beings to find out how they do it. Today, let's find out how Mia Moretti does it.
So let it go, and let's go right to the source. We create a mental atmosphere.
Hey, Sarah.
Hi, Evan.
Tell us about our guest today.
Our guest today, Miss Mia Moretti, is a world-celebrated DJ, songwriter, music director, storyteller, muse, and avid traveler. Mia has performed in venues including the Louvre, the Guggenheim Museum, the National Portrait Gallery, and has performed at some of the fashion world's most memorable events. Mia has garnered a Billboard Dance Top 10 for her remix work and has written on Katy Perry's platinum-selling album, Witness. As one half of the DJ violin duo, The Dolls, Mia has played music festivals including Bonnaroo, Full Moon Festival, and toured as supporting act for Katy Perry, Eve, and Mika. Mia is a creative contributor for the Fashionable Lampoon and has created capsule collections for shoe designer Issa Tapia. Did I say that right? Issa Tapia?
Who cares?
And sustainable artisan brand Peace & Co. Mia has also appeared as season 3 judge on VH1's DJ competition Master of the Mix and has a new series of her own called Pillows and Plates. Mia, we are so excited to have you as our guest and hear all about you and your process.
Really crazy. You forget the things you do sometimes.
I know, right?
Always. Whoa. I'm tired.
You're like, wait, I have done a lot.
Yeah, I did that. Wow.
Well, Mia, we start every episode with a segment that we like to call A Rose and a Thorn.
And we sing our theme song.
A rose and a thorn. A rose and a thorn. A rose and a thorn.
So you know this. But a rose is basically something you're incredibly grateful for right now. And a thorn is something that's literally a thorn in your side and you need to let it go. So we're going to start with a rose because gratitude should always come first. And we're going to end with a thorn so we can literally sage it away and let it go.
Okay.
So let's start with everyone's rose. Does anyone have their rose ready to go?
No, guess first. Mia, you go with your rose.
Okay.
I'm so grateful for 2019, actually.
Ooh, I love that.
I like that one, too.
Oh, everyone I've talked to, I feel like it's a universal feeling
yeah.
of renewal, of rebirth, of new energy and new life and out with the old. I think 2017 and 2018 were horrible years and
very
transitional years.
Mm-hmm.
And really across the board, it feels like with 2019, there's been this release of pressure and fear that we've been building up. And it feels like the world is our oyster. And it's a new, almost like we've entered a new turning of the moon.
Yeah, I really feel that too. It does feel like all around the board, everybody's energy is like, oh, like refreshing, and people are excited for this year. I feel it.
Evan?
I've been really chill. I don't have like anxiety and stuff like that. I feel like that's part of it. I just feel very like.
That is part of it, yeah.
I feel a lot of acceptance, of like self-acceptance right now, which is really cool.
My rose is I have started painting again, which is something I always like. Used to do all the time as a hobby. I used to love to do it. So I set up over the last couple of days, I set up a little like station in my garage. I cleaned out my, you have to come to my house, by the way, while you're here.
I can't wait to.
So I moved a lot of shit around and I set up like a little station, bought some canvases, and I started painting again. And I haven't literally done it in years. So it just feels so good to express that. And I love it so much. And I'm excited to see what I create now at this time in my life.
Why did you do that?
Actually, I did it when I was at Hoffman. In one of my meditations, I like saw myself painting and I was like, oh my God, I have to like start painting again. It was just almost like a feeling that came back to me. Like I needed that sort of expression going on. So I went and got all the shit and I'm going to start. Well, I already started and it's just something I have to say,
I think for people that have their creative outlet, also their career, mm-hmm. it's really nice to have another creative outlet that's unrelated to your professional life.
Totally. Oh my God, totally. Yes. Yeah.
I think it's important. I think they feed off of each other.
Me too. Well, because I feel like when your job is creative in one area, it starts to become like a job.
Mm-hmm.
It's still creative and amazing that it's your job, but doing another form of, you know, art just feels so good and free. So that's definitely my rose.
My rose, I think, is my daily routine. I kind of went off a couple months ago and I felt like really imbalanced. And after the new year, I went back into like my daily. I know we talk about that. We'll get to that later. But it's kind of like put me right. I think it's been like kind of like a spiritual and emotional and mental like backcracking. Like I went to like my own personal chiropractor, which is just getting up early and going to my, you know, AA meeting in the morning and then working out and then doing my meditation and then staying off my phone and like just getting back into the routine of things. And I fought it for so hard. And I didn't go to a meeting for like a month. And I was like, just, it's fine. I don't have to go. And like, everything's fine. And the minute I start going back into my routine, I'm like, ah, it's like medicine all over my soul.
Nice.
So that's my rose.
Love that. Okay, thorns, Mia.
Let's mix it up.
Okay.
Do you want to go straight into your thorn?
Do I want to go straight into my thorn?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I can go into my thorn.
Okay.
My thorn is procrastination.
Mm.
I absolutely hate it. I have a list of things that I want to do in my life, and I keep coming up with other things that are more of a priority, but they're not more of a priority, and I'm trying to figure out why I'm not diving into those things, like why I'm not making those things more important than they are. Like I talk that they're important, I have them on a list like they're important, and then when it comes time to do them, something always takes precedent. And so I'm trying to figure out how to not procrastinate on the things that make me happy. The things that I'm doing instead are more like obligation things. They don't make me happy as much. And maybe I'm like really like good at them and maybe it's easier for me. They come easier, which is why I run from the other stuff. But I'd like to try to figure that out.
I think my thorn is obsessed at this moment, obsessing. Like it's always been something I've had as a sort of, you know, obsessive mind. And I sort of go down rabbit holes with like my health or anxiety. It can go to anything.
Right.
But it's just that mind frame of just obsessing to where it like distracts me from things that I really want to do.
Are you like generally an overthinker?
Yeah, but it's more of like an obsessive thoughts, intrusive thoughts type of thing. I mean, when it comes to like, if I don't feel good, I'll go down a rabbit hole of all the things that are wrong with me, as opposed to like staying positive and moving through it and doing the things to take care of myself. I go into this obsessive mindset, and I can recognize the pattern now, which is a big deal, is I know when I'm doing it. It's just taking the steps to like move through it, you know? But I feel like recently it's just been kind of creeping in. I think over the holidays it's really crept in because I've had so much free time and like literally to the point of like I was so bored. And I just had too much time to think, really.
But you know what? Like I feel like we freak out when we have too much free time. And then when we're too busy, all we want is free time.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, that actually goes perfectly into my thorn.
Oh,
yeah. Ooh, perfect.
Which is
transition.
Freedom.
Your thorn is freedom.
Yes.
Mm, oh, interesting.
And I've always lived with the ethos of someone who is very free and does things when I want to do them and follows my heart and lives passionately day by day. And at the end of this year, I spent some time thinking about what I want for the future. And I realized that that was sort of the first time I've ever done that. I've ever stopped to try to put structure in my life.
Mm.
And so that's one of my huge goals for this year is to learn what structure looks like. Because I've always really ran away from structure and I've had such a fear of structure. And that's both in my personal life, in relationships, and in my career.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think that freedom that I like value so highly and really just think of as my, like, that's who I am, I think is holding me back from being who I want to be for the rest of my life.
How do you think you got to that place? Or why?
Well, this year was the first year in my life that I've ever been to a therapist.
Oh.
And I loved it. And I had a few aha moments or revelations after just sort of talking through some things, mostly about I was raised in a very free household. And from both sides of parenting, that in different ways, they were both very free spirits.
Mm.
So I never knew what structure looked like. So for me, like if something naturally just feels comfortable, like that feeling inside where like this is the right thing to do is the thing that doesn't have the structure. When it has the structure, I like push away and I like this is odd, this feels bizarre to me.
You feel like I'm imprisoned, not used to this. Kind of?
Oh, completely.
Yeah, yeah.
Or even in like relationships, I think that's a huge thing too, because I feel like, well, why is this person wanting to take all my time? And why is this person like needing to do X, Y, and Z? Like, I just need to be free. Like, I need to be in control of my own time. And even when I have nothing to do, you know, as soon as someone puts like a boundary on me, I start thinking, well, I gotta go see this person, or I gotta go to this event, or I gotta like dive into work here.
Right.
But I think those are actually reactions to my fear of just like being in something structured, being in a box with walls. I think that's okay.
That's amazing that you are coming to that place.
Yeah, so I've only been to therapy 4 times now.
That's great.
But I feel like, wow, like what's to come?
Mm-hmm. Well,
I wish therapy wasn't so expensive.
I know, seriously, I know.
So obsessiveness?
Yes.
False freedom?
Ah.
Faux freedom?
Why are you putting me in a box?
Or just freedom, too much freedom?
It's structure the fear of structure.
Fear of structure.
Fear of structure.
There it is. And procrastination.
Procrastination. We're going to sage them away right now.
Let's sage these thorns away and let them all go right now.
Can't wait for this song.
Mm. Every time you do the chimes, I feel like I literally feel like it leaves my body.
Oh, it's chimes.
It's chimes. No, it leaves the room with the chimes.
It's digital sage.
It's digital sage. Okay, I think it's time to dive into the good stuff. Mia, when do you first remember being creative? Like your very first moment?
Actually, I remember being in kindergarten or first grade, and on the playground in breaks in between class, I remember having in my head, stuck in my head, lyrics from songs that my dad would play in the car on the way to school and weaving them together with other lyrics to create these stories.
Do you remember any of the songs, like what they were?
Well, it was always the Eagles. Lots of, I mean, I remember, Desperado really sticks out.
Love that.
I love that song.
Me too. And you would weave them together to create your own stories.
Or just matching them with things. Mm-hmm. Or not necessarily writing a whole story with them, but just taking a piece of one that's kind of stuck in your, one melody that's stuck in your head. Or, but more than the melody, it was really just the lyrics. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, three lyrics from another one. And
making your own little collage.
Like you're doing mashups in your head?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so did you come from a creative family? Were your parents creative? How were you encouraged to be creative?
A lot of encouragement for creativity. My mother is an aromatherapist. Mm. And my father was a doctor, but his passion was music. So we had a music room in our house, and my childhood memories are really just of that room being full with instruments and people and kind of going into the night, everyone drum circles and didgeridoos and someone on the piano. And
cool.
Every night at dinner, my dad had the guitar, and him and my brother would be playing guitar and singing at the dinner table. Oh, wow. Like, you know, three quarters of the way through.
That's amazing.
What were they, and like original stuff or like covers?
A lot of Grateful Dead, probably some Eagles got in there.
They're like a classic rock family.
Yes. Strong.
Strong.
Elton John, probably. Those those good classics.
Yes. Did you love that kind of music when you first heard it?
Loved. I think also that music, like back to stories, that music really, every song is its own story. It really, from like start to finish, you create a whole world.
It really
And I
was.
Think I really like loved seeing these worlds and mm-hmm. going on these journeys.
So when did you start being creative in music?
But I never really considered myself a creative person. And every year for my birthday, my mother gave me a journal that said, follow your dreams on the first page.
Oh.
But like, that's so many journals.
Right.
Like who goes through a whole journal a year? Now I go through them like once a week, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I would assume you would have gone through them.
But it felt like a lot of pressure as a kid.
Yeah, I can see that.
I don't know. What's my dream? Like, no one told me what it should be.
So there wasn't a moment where you were like, oh, I'm doing this, and you sort
never,
of knew.
Never. And I still, like, don't feel like there was, I've maybe these last few years, or like last 10 years, actually, to be fair, like, now that I've had a career in DJing, mm-hmm. that is like feels very sustainable. It feels very thought through. I make mm-hmm. a living. So I definitely like now feel that way. But even like definitely when I started DJing, no, I just felt like, well, I'll do this and I'll do that, but I don't know. And
but you obviously had developed a passion for DJing early. I mean, you were like, oh, I want to collect records and DJ. And
but you're in high
school.
Are you into music?
High school, I'm just like stoned, going to Phish concerts.
Right. After high school. Like, do you go to college?
I went to UCLA.
Wow.
Do you go to college?
And did you graduate?
I did.
Wow. I didn't know that. What did you study?
International Development Studies.
What is that?
It's an interdisciplinary major. So what's incredible about it, that what they offer at UCLA, is that you take from different majors. So I took from anthropology, I took from international economics, and I took from theater.
Wow, I didn't know you went to UCLA. That's crazy.
And you're
crazy.
A theater kid.
I mean, like,
Like musicals, plays?
No, I mean, like, I was in the Vagina Monologues.
Oh, that sounds about right.
That was like the only thing I got in. Actually, this is kind of a funny story. When I was in the theater, because I wasn't in the theater program, they just let you take from the theater major.
Oh, okay.
So you're like halfway, you're like a step kid in it.
Right, right.
And I called my parents. I was like, guess what? I got cast in a play. I was so excited. It was like my first play. And it's silence on the other line. Like, silent. I was like, hello? And then I just hear my dad say, do you have to sing?
No! That's so sad. And I was
like, no, it's the Vagina Monologues. Like, oh, congratulations!
Oh, I love when you sing.
Thank you. I love to sing. Sometimes it's good to do things you're just horrible at.
Were they really critical of you? Like, were you like singing around the dinner table and they were like, stop?
They were never critical, but I think they were just like, that moment, I think they just were being parents.
Right.
You know, like Sarah's heard me sing. Like, they just were like, like there's a car coming, you're in the road, we got to get her out.
They're like, are you sure you want to do this with me?
I mean, that's good though. Like, you know how many people go on like Idol and stuff like that, and their parents are like, no, you're amazing,
yeah,
sweetie.
True.
Honestly,
true.
It's the first time it's the only, I think, only time they've ever like stopped me from doing or sort of had any trepidation about me doing anything.
Right.
Everything else is like, oh, you'll be great. You're so great. You're amazing. You can do it.
Are you DJing at UCLA?
No, I am not. I'm working as a part-time. I have a part-time job at the Standard on Hollywood Boulevard.
Oh,
tight. I was probably there.
I was a box girl.
Ooh.
What's a box
it's
girl?
It's basically the best job you can have in college.
You just
laid in the box?
Mm-hmm.
You laid in the box?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You definitely saw her in the box.
For sure.
Well, you saw someone in the box.
I saw many different people in the box.
Yeah, so I'm in the box, and I'm thinking, like, this is the best job anyone could have. And I was so stoked. I would bring my laptop in and watch movies, do my homework, sleep.
In the box?
Yeah, all of it.
Yeah, you could do all that.
You just do whatever you want.
Oh.
As long as you wear white.
I thought it was just...
Very Source family.
You laid there. I thought it was just you modeled, like, you couldn't do things.
They wanted it to be like, oh, you're peering in on someone in their living room.
Right. That is an awesome job.
And they pay you to do that.
They paid me. So I'm thinking, like, this is the bee's knees. Then I'm seeing this other person come in. At the same time I come in. And they're DJing at the Standard because they have the DJ in the lobby. And then they're leaving after, like, 3 hours.
Mm. Oh, how long were you in the box?
7 hours.
Oh my God, that's so long. Or
it was probably an 8-hour shift with a 1-hour break.
Right.
Oh, I wouldn't even take the break though. It's kind of like I'm just sleeping. But so then another DJ comes in, and then I'm like, so I got the job because I was living in this house. I was like renting a guest house on Crescent Heights, and all these cool kids lived in the main house, and one of them was the booker of the box girl. And the girl didn't show up, and he's like, Mia, like, you gotta go in the box. Like, the girl's not there, please do it. So that was like how I got the job. So then I'm like, after a couple months, it's like, so Sebastian, like, what about like the DJ? How do I like get, I got to get out of the box.
Right.
And I got to get down there because this person's like coming in, they got a couple hours and then they're out of there. So.
And that's the person that's like DJing like right before the pool area, like in that living room kind of thing?
Okay. Mm-hmm, the lobby DJ. And these were the rules that they had for the lobby DJ. You had to play all vinyl. You couldn't play any top 10 from any decade.
Mm.
And that was it. So that was my first DJ gig.
So how do you transition into actually learning how to beat match and, you know?
I had turntables at my house. And I had a record collection that I had been building. And so this is like a little bit later now. I think I did that, like, that lobby job. I don't know, a little bit of time. I didn't get that job. I saw that job. I didn't, like, quite get it right away. But at the same time, also, like, while that was happening, I got turntables in my house, and music sort of transitioned from vinyl into digital. And that was when Serato had just come out, which really changed the whole game for DJs, because if anyone's not familiar with it, Serato is a hardware program that you use with turntables, but instead of bringing your a collection of records, you bring two control records, and through the hardware and the software, you are sending your digital file onto the control record.
Right.
And you're manipulating it exactly like you would manipulate the record.
Right. So you don't have to bring lug records with you.
There's actually no difference of how you're playing as a DJ, except the physical record isn't changing each time. What's really interesting is I'm such a visual person. I've always been, an even with music, I see it more than I hear it. So like even when I'm telling you like, oh yeah, I remember Peaches and ESG and La Tigra and all these bands, I'm seeing the album covers are flashing in front of me. Mm-hmm. So I think with vinyl, what's special about it is it's so visual. So for me, it was really like about flipping through and recognizing the cover and pulling it up.
Right.
But what happened when it all went digital is it just opens up your library so massively. So now, if you couldn't afford to buy every record from the band you liked, you can now do that. And now you could find, you know, you could find the stuff that was maybe only released in certain places, or you could find the place that the rare records, and you could find everything, and you could. And I think that really opened up the way that DJs mixed as well, because now you didn't have to hire the DJ that just played electronic music, or the DJ that only played disco, or the DJ that played pop, because that was their record collection.
Right.
Now every DJ is sort of expected to just play every genre.
Weren't you DJing at, I forgot what the night was called, but DJ AM was always playing there. And was it CineSpace?
So DJ AM, I used to club a lot. And DJ AM was the DJ at every club in LA.
Yeah.
So I would just, and I was obsessed with his music.
Did you learn a lot from him?
Everything. Like I didn't care what the club was, whatever night, wherever he was playing, I went. And I became friends with him, and actually DJ AM gave me my first set of turntables.
Oh, that's amazing.
But what he actually like taught me really more than anything else was like for me, he was God. Like he was at the highest level that a DJ could be. He was so talented. Yet every day he practiced, and every day he said like, oh, I have to prepare for this gig. And he really taught me that more than his actual skill, because what that says to me is like, it actually doesn't matter what skill you are at anything, you never master it, and you have to practice it every day and work on it every day.
I love that.
When DJ AM was playing, I was like, wow, he's actually not a musician, he's a storyteller. Like he's sitting here like writing a story that we're all players in the story.
Yeah.
And that was sort of the time that in my head I thought to myself like, wow, like I'm not, so I told you I couldn't sing. Like, I'm not musical at all. And I always thought of music as something that was just there for me to enjoy. Like, I got so much pleasure out of it and joy out of it. And I was such an observer of music. So, like, growing up, like, my dad and brother would play the guitar, the music room. I loved being surrounded by music, but I always thought my life was just meant, I was just meant to sort of be on the outside of it and be observing it.
Right.
So that for that moment when I heard him do that, I had this thought like, wow, like he's this music god. He's taking songs that other people wrote and he's making a new song.
Mm.
And that's when I was like, wow, like maybe I could do something like that, where, because I appreciate music so much and I love music so much. Like, this is my way to show appreciation for the songs that I love.
That's so cool.
And I can really like pay homage to all these artists and these incredible songs and put them together.
In your own way.
Yes.
That's so cool. I love that.
So that was really when I wanted to be a DJ.
So did you, when you moved to New York, is that kind of when you started really like
getting jobs? Or so?
Yeah.
So, and I think this happens with a lot of people, almost like you have to leave where you're from to become you, or to get to the next level of where you want to go, or to take a risk. And so I always thought like, oh, like people don't like people know me don't know me as a DJ here. They know me as Mia, or they know me as and I have so many friends there that, you know, that I knew from college or I knew from whatever, and I was never a DJ. So I never really considered myself a DJ, or I never called myself a DJ. Mm-hmm. And then I moved to New York, and the day I got to New York, everyone I met, like, I told them I was a DJ.
Right.
I felt like I didn't have the expectations of other people. Mm-hmm. And that freedom to be what I wanted to be, and just to take a risk and to say I was a DJ and do it. And obviously, like, that doesn't really mean anything if you're not playing. And so I basically just went to, I like walked down Avenue A where I lived and just went into every bar and asked them, like, can I do a night here? Do you do a happy hour? Do you have a DJ during your happy hour? Oh, maybe like I could do a happy hour party for you if you let me play from like 5 to 6 or 5 to whatever time, and just give me like a percentage of the bar, or get, you know, like try to just make a deal with somebody if they're, you know, you can't take no for an answer.
And did it just organically start to grow? Like, you started to play more and more and meet more people?
I think probably for like the first 5 years I lived in New York, I was just taking every job and creating every opportunity I could. And, you know, then I started getting some nighttime shifts, and they're gnarly in New York, you know, so you would start at 10 and go till 4 in the morning.
Oh, my God.
And you're making like $50 and 5 drink tickets or something like that.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
But I was so happy to do it because, A, I was like, I'm a club kid, so I would be in the club anyways. Like, now I got to be in the club and be the one playing the music.
Right, right.
And it really, like, it was so much work. I couldn't do it now. I'm too tired. Like, but it was so much work. But when you're 20,
sure,
and you're ambitious, and like you have your whole future ahead of you, and you don't have anything to lose. I was out every night till 4 in the morning, and everyone I was meeting, I was inviting them to the club and texting everybody to come to this night, mm-hmm, on this party, and, you know, like every night of the week, texting 200 people to like try it, so at least I'm not at the club alone.
Right. So how did it parlay for you into, I know we're probably skipping a bit, but how did it parlay into like the fashion scene? Because you do so much for fashion and...
Yeah. Was New York City. That right. was 5 years of playing every skanky club in New York till 4 in the morning, and then, you know, becoming friends with such a wide array of people, mm-hmm, and creatives. And then 5 years later, those people having their own clothing line and
right.
working for Harper's Bazaar, or working mm-hmm. for Vogue, or, mm-hmm, well, less working for Vogue and probably more.
Right. It really is the connections.
I mean, New York City is the epicenter of the United States, maybe the world. You know, it really has such... I mean, everything is there. Fashion is all there. All the magazines are there. I mean, also, like, 10 years, or now, like, 5 years ago, say, like, magazines were still in business. So,
yeah.
And there was so much money in retail. So every time someone... obviously, like, for after every fashion show, there was an after party. After every store opening, there's a party.
Mm-hmm. Is it still I mean, other than, like, Fashion Week, is it still popping like that there?
A little bit. I think New York will always be New York. And then, like, things change. Like, Brooklyn has changed New York so much, too, because now a lot of stuff has moved there. So, mm-hmm, like, if you're going to go out now, a lot of the clubs and dancing is now over in Brooklyn, spread out a little bit. I mean, I'm sure that always existed, but yeah, it has changed. There's not as much money in that anymore. Like, retail's horrible, so mm-hmm, everyone's not just like throwing money at like, oh, let's she's a DJ. Like, it sort of, my first jobs were like, oh, you're a DJ, we should have you like at the store opening.
Right.
Where now it's almost a norm, or like there's a store opening, you need a DJ.
Right.
And then it's like, okay, well, you know, you have like a budget for that. Like, but whoever, but it was kind of still novelty and new.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So.
What are some of the highlights that you've experienced in, like, your DJ career?
My favorite moments are, like, always still happening and still coming. Sure. And like the moment, like even like today, this moment is like, I feel like I'm more blessed than ever to be a DJ now. And now I'm doing runway music for a lot of those same designers whose after parties I used to do. So
amazing.
Prabhu Gurung is one of my really good friends who I always did his. I remember when he did his first collection, I did his after party in Tribeca. And, you know, this season I'm doing his runway music.
That's so cool.
So I feel like, God, like that's my best memory.
What's runway music?
The music that the models walk to during the runway show.
And is that like creating like a story for that? So, I mean, you have to match up the different like looks and stuff like that?
So it works a few different ways, but usually the designer has a concept for the show in mind, whether that concept is an emotion, whether that concept is a world he's building, he or she is building, whether that concept is a musical genre even, as obvious as that. And then, yeah, I work with a designer to create that sound of that world.
Do you love doing
that?
That's
so cool.
I love that. I love it so much because... So DJing is so instinctual and it's so in the moment, which is interesting, like what we talked about my life and like sort of my rose and my thorn being in the moment and just like moving. And I think that's why I love DJing so much, because all the preparation you can do in the world, you do. And then the second your gig starts, you throw it all out because right. You have to just open your eyes mm-hmm. and see
Read
and feel what's happening, because as soon as you're stuck to a script in a room, like the play is over, so to speak.
I think that's a great piece of creative advice.
Absolutely.
Is to prepare for it, but be also okay with throwing it all out.
Yeah.
Just improvising and letting the creativity flow, the creative flow just happen
mm-hmm.
and following it down a different journey.
Because you can't force anything on people. And mm-hmm. there's so many different factors that go into that night at that club or that party, the weather, politics, the venue, the lighting in the venue, the time of the party,
mm-hmm.
the setup of where the stage, where the DJ booth is, mm-hmm. where the stage is. There's so many things that you don't know till you get there and can change throughout the night even.
Sure.
The second you limit yourself to something you've prepared, you actually kill any ability for there to be spontaneity mm-hmm. and there to be discovery and you to even surprise yourself. And I think even my own energy while I'm DJing affects a crowd.
Sure.
So if I'm sitting there knowing exactly my next move every time, I think people read that.
Yeah.
And I think people are bored by that.
Wow. Yeah.
So when I surprise myself, I think I also surprise the people on the dance floor.
I love that.
So when I started doing runway music, it was so incredible for me because I got to sit down and really put thought into every move and then rethink it and then go back and see, oh, does that actually still tell the emotion that we wanted to tell?
Mm.
So I got to be spontaneous, and then but I also got to be an editor.
Right, right.
And
it's also something that kind of lives on.
And it does. Well, and then you get to, I get to experience it
yeah.
then as a bystander.
That's
cool. After I make it, which I never get to do when you're the DJ.
Right.
So it's really incredible. And that collaboration that happens, because mm-hmm. it's not just for me.
Right.
DJing is like very personal in a sense, mm-hmm. even though it's for everyone on the dance floor, it's me doing it. And it's all on my shoulders. And I'm in complete control of it. Where the runway music, you're now collaborating with somebody else and it comes alive.
Mm-hmm.
So when the models walk out, and then you never see it all together till the final show.
That's cool.
Because, you know, you see the clothes, and a lot of times it's just the sketches because they're not even, the final edits aren't done yet. And then most of the time the run-throughs, the models aren't dressed, so then you don't see the final moment until it all comes together.
Mm-hmm. It's like it is really like storytelling too. You're telling a story through the music.
Yeah,
it's so cool. Tell us about formerly the Dolls and now Club Soda, and your original music, and what does that look like?
So I've been working with a violinist named Margot for almost 10 years. And wow. We started as a DJ duo, and then we slowly started creating original edits to songs and then original music. And we sort of like, we played. So when you asked me sort of like the best jobs I've ever had, mm-hmm. together we were so blessed to have so many incredible opportunities. And I think we did something that was really original and really different. We didn't know anyone else that was doing that at the time that we started almost 10 years ago, and we weren't following any example. So we were really like free with it. And we were every day, like we surprised ourselves, and we had no expectation. So we just got to play, and we got to like, there was no way we could mess up because there was no model we were following.
Right. And to be clear, it's you're DJing and Margot is playing violin at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah. I've obviously seen it a bunch and it's incredible to watch.
And then we started adding components like a string quartet.
Wow.
Which is really incredible because, you know, like anything that you do, a lot of times you need change, you need to evolve, you need to, like we were boring ourselves, we were realizing. Mm-hmm. And musically, we wanted to take it to another level. So we always wanted to add other instrumentation to it. And we always imagined it as something, as an instrumental project. So the first song we just released, well, not the first song we released, but the first song we released as Club Soda is an instrumental disco track called Club Soda.
Awesome.
We decided, after being the Dolls for a really long time and playing a lot of events, and we played a few festivals, and we opened for a few different artists. We went on tour with Eve, which was one of the funnest things I've ever done. And she's incredible.
Did she just blow your mind?
Every show. we opened for her, and then we came back out during her set and did two songs with her.
Cool.
Which was so fun. And I mean, talk about someone who's just an example of, I mean, I mentioned DJ AM, who was the best in his field and practiced every day. I mean, Eve, I've never met anyone like more grateful for every day, for every job, for every opportunity. No matter what size venue we were playing, she was always like so blessed to be there, so happy to be there, gave it her all. We could be playing for 40 people. We never were, but we could be. And she would get out there like she was performing for 50,000 people.
I love that. She's amazing. And then you opened for Katy Perry.
We opened for Katy Perry. We went on tour with Katy Perry twice for her last tour she just finished, and mm-hmm. then her tour before that.
Tell us about Pillows and Plates.
Yeah.
Because you are an avid traveler.
Yeah, I've gotten to travel the world as a DJ, which is, and like touring and then one-off gigs. Oh, I have to tell you really quick, my favorite gig.
Oh, yeah. Tell us.
That you mentioned earlier at the Louvre. Mm-hmm. So Margot and I played twice at the Louvre. The first time we opened for Janet Jackson.
What? That is amazing.
That was the second time. The first time we opened for Diana Ross.
I love how casual that is.
I know. Like, how did I never know that? That is epic.
And it's in the Pyramid. That's where they do the concert.
Uh-huh.
So I can't even describe the feeling of like the sound of the music and the violin echoing through the glass pyramid.
Oh, I can't even, I can like feel it in my essence right now. That must have been so epic.
That's one of the examples of the opportunity I've had to travel the world and
incredible.
To go to a lot of amazing places that we all know and love, mm-hmm. and places that we don't know and mm-hmm. don't know how to love yet.
And you love to travel, and you love cooking and food and that whole culture, and Pillows and Plates sort of brings it all together.
Yeah, Pillows and Plates is a show, a travel show, really. I mean, we call it a series on joy, and it's me finding joy in places all over the world. And it's true. I really do. Like when I go to a place, the first thing I want to do is meet the people and eat the food and understand where I am.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think the food is really how you understand the people.
Yeah.
How did that start?
Well, that just started me being hungry.
I mean, even being, because we've traveled a bit together, and even just being with you traveling, that is an episode of Pillows and Plates. I mean, you just, that's what you do. You meet the people, you enjoy the culture, the food, the, you know, everything the place has to offer. So I just feel like it's your life.
I mean, it is. That's what, and then I wanted to be able to capture that and save it and share it, because you come, you find things and you meet people and you try things that you want to give to other people. You want to share that joy.
Mm-hmm.
So Pillows and Plates was my way of being able to find these things and discover these things and share them with, tell other people about them.
You have so many things going on.
I know, so many things.
You know, Mia, Sarah and I talk a lot about spirituality and having a spiritual practice as a means to balance us so we can connect and be inspired every day. It's something that we like to call the daily.
The daily. So the daily is where we just talk about our daily routines, basically. So what is your daily routine? I know you're talked about earlier your sense of freedom and how you kind of, you know, spontaneous. And do you have something that works for you every single day? Do you have a routine, an everyday routine? How has it changed over the years?
I'm really not. I don't have any routine, but I love a routine.
I think routines are almost essential for creatives in a way. Even if it's something you don't do at the same time every day, but is there something you do? Like, I know you write a lot of poetry and you paint. Is there something you...
So I have... sorry to interrupt you.
No, but go ahead.
So next to my... Well, I love my cup of coffee in the morning.
There it is. That's a routine.
I am so happy. I wake up and I'm like, oh God, and this, and I don't know, and that. And then I'm like, oh, coffee. Oh, I'm fine now.
I'm the same.
I get to get up and I get to have my coffee. I'm so happy. And then I get out, I'm like so happy to like run downstairs and make my put my coffee on and just have a cup of coffee. And next to my coffee maker, I have a journal, which my mother gave me, which the first page
follow
says,
your dreams.
Still. And
so you journal every day?
So next to my coffee maker is a journal, and in it are my coffee poems.
Oh.
And
what's a coffee poem?
What's a coffee poem? A coffee poem is a poem you write to start the day.
I mean, that's a daily routine right there.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So you drink a cup of coffee and you write a poem.
No, I usually write the poem while the coffee's brewing.
Oh.
Oh, I love that.
Before I start my day, before I get distracted, because I know like you don't give yourself time to do the things you love. I love writing poetry. So I just like, and it's like a coffee poem also isn't a finished poem. It's just a thought. It can be a wish. It can be anything.
A word.
This might be my favorite daily routine we've heard so far.
Same.
It's so fresh and original, and I've never heard anything like it.
I think I'm going to do it. I actually just thought, like, I want to put a little journal by my coffee.
It's a coffee poem.
Do you have to write it while the coffee's brewing? Do you have to write it in the time that it takes for the coffee to brew, and like when the coffee's done, you're done?
Or no.
Like,
you can do whatever you want.
Right.
But I will tell you that if you wait till the coffee's done, you're going to be so excited about your cup of coffee, you're not going to write your poem. You might.
So okay. You want to get it done before the coffee's done.
I just try to do it before the day starts, because once the day starts,
you're just in that zone. Yeah,
and then you put pressure on things, and everything is so precious because it's part of your day. So like, you don't want to write a poem unless you're ready to write a poem, and you don't want to sit down on the typewriter unless like I'm in the right mood and I have like everything set up and there's not like papers on the table and there's not clothes I have to put away and just shit.
The distractions.
That's there in life. So this is just like a coffee poem.
And what do you get out of the coffee poem?
It's that fear you have. A lot of times, sometimes it's that fear you have in the morning or that anxiety or like whatever. Sometimes it's just nice to write. It's getting out of your head something that's in your head.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not always that. Sometimes it's just a love note.
Mm-hmm. I love a coffee poem.
It's so cool. So do you meditate?
I don't meditate as much as I would like to, but I do Bikram yoga when I can. I usually do it when the day I get back from a trip.
You just came from yoga just today.
Yeah. I love it because I think it really helps with jet lag. A combination, I think, of stretching and sweating.
Yeah.
And using just a little bit of muscle.
Do you consider yourself a spiritual person? How does spirituality play into your life, into your creative process? Are you a God person? Are you something greater than yourself? Like, where do you lie in that area?
To be honest, I don't think about spirituality that much. I don't think about religion and spirituality that much. I definitely believe in the universe. Mm-hmm. I believe in humanity. Mm-hmm. I believe that we take care of each other and that everything sort of happens for a reason. And I think that I believe in life after death, and I believe that we've all been here before and some of us will be here again.
Right.
And I believe we all come at different stages of our lives and we're here for different reasons. But I don't think about it a lot.
Just sort of something bigger than us, like a universal order type of thing, like consciousness.
Yeah, we're just such small specks, you know?
So you don't think about it. So it doesn't really play into your creative process. You don't tie the two together.
I definitely
in a way.
Think it's in my creative process, but it's not, I don't consciously think about it because I grew up with so much I grew up with a lot of spirituality and no forced religion.
Right.
But there was always, we were always saying a blessing and we were always grateful for the earth that gave us the food and for our health. And I think I experienced death a lot, like early on in my life. And that gave me a greater understanding of life, I think. And yeah, so it's part of, it's a huge part of who I am and what I think and how I act, but it's not on my forefront of my consciousness.
Right.
Before we end each episode, Sarah and I like to do something called Golden Nuggets.
Golden Nuggets.
Why did that? That was...
We crafted that one for you specifically. Wow. Also.
Golden Nuggets is where Evan, myself, and our guest Mia are each asked to bring in or recommend something to our listeners that inspire us and help our creative process or quiet our minds, foster our growth, etc. A tool that we love to utilize in connecting with our creative self. It can be a book, meditation, a workout, a mantra, a poem, etc. So let's start. I'll start with my golden nugget. My golden nugget today is actually something that I learned from Mia. And I don't really know how to say it in like one word or whatever, but so a lot of times when I've been with Mia and we're at a dinner or any kind of like sit down, you know, with a group of people, there's a notebook. Usually Mia has a notebook and she starts with a line of a poem. Just any line that comes from her mind, and then you pass it to the next person, and they continue the poem with their line. And you go all the way around the table until it comes back to the person that started it, and you read it out loud. And it's such a beautiful experience because you're connecting with each other, and you're creating something. And you're just getting out of your head. And, you know, sometimes when you're at big dinners or big groups of people, it's hard to like all connect. And I think that's just such a cool way that brings everybody together. And yeah, I don't know. It just helps you get out of your head and be a little bit more creative. So I don't even know how I would say what that is. Group poetry.
Conscious group. Yeah. Group poetry.
Yeah, group poetry.
I like group poetry.
That's my golden nugget.
We should do one.
Yeah, let's do one.
Like just freestyle off the top, like off the dome.
I guess we should just, yeah, because this is a podcast, so we.
Yeah, let's do it off the dome.
Let's go off the dome piece.
Should I start?
Yeah, it's your nug. You start.
I'll end.
Okay.
Oh boy, so much pressure. The middle child.
Together, we are a force to be reckoned with.
Like storms converging in the horizon.
Bang.
That was amazing.
That was tight. That was really good.
So there it is. That's group poetry.
I love that. We're gonna put this poem up on our site.
Yes,
I'm excited about that.
Yeah,
you're gonna make a track like it. For it, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
we're gonna curate.
That's tight.
It's called Bang.
I'm digging that. Oh man.
So that's my nug.
That was really original. I like that.
Thanks, Mia, for my nugget.
It's ours
and
now.
And thanks for having us do that. That was really cool. I like yeah. My golden nugget is it's actually an app that I started using. Someone put me up on recently called Calm. Mm. And so like in my search of like finding like a lot of like really good inspiration as far as like mindfulness and wellness, I read a lot of books or I listen to like other podcasts or I look at, not that there are any other podcasts, no. And I look at apps and stuff and whatnot and I try a few different things. This one kind of is like, I don't know why it took me forever. I'm probably like really late on this because this is, it was like Google's Editor's Choice of 2018. It was Apple's like number one wellness podcast of 2017. So I'm like super late on it, but it's like the perfect hub. It's like the master hub of all wellness and within an app setting and master classes of like, you know, different like masters teach meditation. There's different like remedies on how to like get restful sleep and wake up feeling refreshed. There's music that helps you focus or music that helps you relax or music you can put on while you sleep. There's different other video lessons that teach you how to like take care of your body in different ways. And then like, there's like one-on-one master classes that you could do. It's pretty amazing. And actually, so there's this one that I've been doing. I know we've talked about gratitude and gratitude lists on other episodes, but there's this woman who's the head of mindfulness for Calm. Her name is Tamara Levitt. And she, in one of her master classes, talks about this gratitude list thing that she does. And you have to do it with a partner or with somebody else, which is like really cool. So it's not like doing it on your own. I know we've talked about like waking up and doing one. But this one's really cool. So, you know, you sit there with somebody else and you go, you know, 10, and they have to say something there. You count them down, the other person from 10 to 1, and they have to say something they're grateful for, right? And it has to be very specific. So it can't just be like, my family. It has to be like, my brother so-and-so, why I'm grateful for him, and what feeling does it make me feel? And it's so interesting because it gets really specific. And you start finding these different threads of feelings and reasons why you're grateful. And it's I feel like it gives you like a real deep dive perspective into that.
I love that.
So I've kind of been digging into this like gratitude thing with Tamara within the Calm app. But there's so many different things there. I mean, I'll just put on music to go to sleep. Like,
amazing.
And like, it's better than like thinking some crazy thoughts before I go to bed.
That sounds so much better than my $275 an hour therapy.
Oh my God.
But there is, I will qualify this by saying there is free stuff within the app, but there's also like a pay, like a yearly to like unlock all this stuff.
Right.
So it's not like free this one specifically. I think it's like $70 for the year or something.
Amazing. Anyway, love that.
Calm app, check it out. Really cool.
My golden nugget is my typewriter.
Oh.
I love that.
Yeah, my golden nugget is a blank page in my typewriter. When I'm at my typewriter, I never plan what I'm going to write. I just feel it and I write. And because it's a different, because it's not so familiar, pen and paper, when I'm at the typewriter, it's almost like I let just my sort of thoughts go free and I just write.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that giving ourselves that space where we don't judge our thoughts and we don't edit our thoughts And even like when you're writing with a pen, I think sometimes when you're writing and then you see how you write a certain word, that even stops your process a little bit. Like, oh, I don't like that line, or I don't like, oh, like my writing isn't good there. So just the typewriter feels like a very clean space.
I love that.
Oh, my hand just cramped. I wrote one word and I haven't written anything with like 10 years.
Oh my God. Wait. That's so sad.
That typewriter is such, that's so fresh.
Sammy like, just got one actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that like, is 2019 all about typewriters?
Well, Sammy got asked Cleo actually, if she recommended a good place to get him, and he loves to do it. I, with my nails, can't do it, unfortunately.
I love that.
And my nails, my nails are, I enjoy like the art of getting my nails done, so I can't give it up.
Do you feel like a computer stifles you more than
it? No, but I do my job on a computer. Right. So I'm always on my computer, so it doesn't feel like a free space for me. It feels like a workspace.
Do you ever go into a session and write like,
no,
you're only on a computer?
I'm only on a computer.
You guys write on notebooks?
I mean, I do when I'm at home, like just free writing, yeah. But in the studio, that's part of my obsessive mind though, is like, I need to see it. I need it to be perfect on my
I can't do it. I can't write in a notebook. I can't write a song in a notebook.
I know. It's a hard thing to do.
Could you imagine lugging a typewriter into a writing session and then like actually the sounds it makes with other people in the room?
It's really annoying. I brought them to hotel.
You're like, wait, what was that sound? Wait, what was it? Hold on.
I've had them at hotels before and I'm like, oh, no, I can't.
I love the typewriter thing. I mean, I think that the coffee poem and the typewriter, it's just so fresh. It's very like, I don't know anybody who does that stuff, and I love it.
Oh, great. Yeah. Well, maybe
very good nuggets.
Maybe soon you'll know more people.
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, you're going to start a trend. Coffee poems and typewriters. Wait, so where do you get a good typewriter?
I have a dealer.
What?
Yeah. He's based in...
A typewriter dealer?
He's based in the Midwest, which is great because his prices are great. And then every time he, like, when he gets a new one, he'll, like, email me. And they're reasonable. They're, like, $150 or whatever. And then I can also call him, like, oh, the tape's not working or whatever. And he'll, like, walk me through something if there's a, you know, if there's a little kinky. But he tests them all and he puts new ink in. And
do you have more than one?
Yeah.
How many do you have?
I have three at my house. And then I have a few in different places, at different friends. So when I go to a new city, instead of bringing it, I'll call my dealer and I'll order one.
I love and then call I'll my
leave
dealer.
It, and then yeah. I'll leave it at a friend's house.
Oh, that's cool. And so you have them in different cities.
You have a favorite one?
I got a new one for my house, but I still use my original one.
Can we post a picture of your original one?
Yeah, of course.
You sent us a picture of it?
I love that.
Thank you for being our guest and letting us into your creative and spiritual process.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much.
So I know you said it earlier, but where can everyone find you online if they want to follow what you're up to?
If you go to Instagram, my account is my name, Mia Moretti, M-I-A.
Yeah, how do you spell it?
M-I-A-M-O-R-E-T-T-I. And I have my film series, Pillows and Plates, up on there.
You can find us at writetothesource.com or on our Instagram at writetothesource. We'll have all of our guests' daily routines and golden nuggets up on our sites if you want to check them out and see if they inspire you. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through our website or any other platform you listen to podcasts on. And don't forget to rate us and comment and ask us questions and love us.
Mia, thank you so much for being our incredible guest. And I love you so much. And every... guest we have, I read tarot, so I pull a tarot card.
Oh, yes! Oh my God, I've been begging for tarot from you for months.
Well, I pull a tarot card that reminds me of our guest. So,
just in case your listeners don't know, Sarah is the queen of tarot.
Yes, thank you.
No, I have never had a better reading.
Wow, thank you.
And
that means
so much. It's a
true
skill set, and it really... every pull I've ever had with you has been so powerful, and I've learned so much from, and I'm very excited to see what we got.
I could second that, because I had that one reading about a year ago, and it was dead on, remember?
Thank you guys, because it's one of my passions, and to hear that just makes me feel really good because I love it so much. And while you're here, I'll do another real reading for you. But today I pull a card that reminds me of our guest, and for you I pull the Queen of Wands. Mm-hmm. And she is just so empowered and powerful in her femininity and her authenticity. And Wands is all about creative ventures and just ventures in life. And I feel like you have so many different creative talents and that you really own them all. And you are just really such an authentic, creative woman. And, you know, she has her little black cat here, which I love because the black cat, it just means that she's magical and that she is in the world to share her magic with us. And I really believe that you're a magical human and I love you. So you're the Queen of Wands.
Wow. Thank you, Sarah.
That was really beautiful.
So thank you, Mia, and thanks everyone for tuning in. And don't forget, when you're being creative and you want to connect,
let it go and let's go right to the source. We create.